Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back, and thanks much for making the show part of your day. At 11:18, the Redskins had a couple of their defensive leaders speak with the media yesterday. Landon Collins, Jonathan Allen, both said that they're expecting a breakout season on the defensive side of the ball because of the upgrades and changes made to the coaching staff. And we'll get into that. Is that just off-season hype, your normal fodder? Or could there be something to that this time around? But right now, let's go to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline and welcome onto the show Mike Stanton, who is a three-time World Series champion, who's second all-time in appearances in Major League Baseball, and joining us on G&D. Mike, thanks for a couple of minutes. I guess I wanted to ask you first about your three ring fittings and the three times you got your rings, because I'm sure you've seen the Nats are going to be doing this virtual ceremony that'll be nationally televised this weekend. How did you actually get your ring? Were those ceremonies private, or were they done in front of the fans? And what do you remember about it?
No, all of those, to start off with, Grant, Danny, hope you guys are doing well up there. I know things are a lot worse up there in your part of the country than it is down here in Texas, and I hope you guys are safe and sound.
Thank you, buddy.
And all the listeners out there are the same. You know, they were all traditional pregame ceremonies. And, you know, some of them were earlier in the season. There was one of them that was a little later in the season because it took a little longer to get the rings completed and everything. But they were all just traditional, you know, usually on like a Saturday, you know, packed house, well advertised to make sure it was a packed house, that kind of thing.
There are different ways that different organizations have done it, though, right? Is there something that's kind of emerged as standard, Mike? I'm sort of embarrassed that I don't know the answer.
Yeah, you know, and it's not anything, you know, the video they'll play, that kind of stuff, they'll do different things. But it's kind of just a traditional situation. Everybody lines up on the line. They call you up one at a time. You know, the president, the general manager's there. They give you the ring. There's a lot of hoopla and everything. But, you know, it's always pregame. So it's always before a game starts so that the players are always a touch distracted. I think what the Nationals are doing, I think this is going to be really cool, especially for the fans. Because, you know, there's going to be these Zoom videos and everybody's going to get an up close and personal look at how the players respond. Now, hopefully the players do what they're supposed to do and not look at the ring and open the Christmas present before Christmas Day. And, you know, you get a real response. That's one thing that there was always a disconnect. You know, when you look back at it, there was always a disconnect because, you know, all the fans, you know, the fans at home would get a much better view than the fans there at the stadium. Because, you know, the fans are up in the stands, the players are on the field, the players are a little bit distracted because they are still thinking about, hey, we got a baseball game here in a few minutes. And this way, with the cameras up close, there's no baseball game, I think this is going to be a pretty cool situation. I like that the Nationals are doing it. You know, one of the things we're talking about everybody doing is thinking outside the box and trying to do things a little bit different in this new world that we live in now. And it seems like that's what the Nationals are doing here.
Mike Stanton with us on Grant and Danny, a three-time World Series champion. Mike, I completely agree with you on the fan element of this. I think they'll have better access than anybody's mm-hmm. ever had to watch players get rings. There was a piece today, though, that I saw in The Athletic written by Britt Ciroli where – she's talked to several players who are really upset because at least according to her report, there's going to be a handful or several of players, I suppose, who get their rings on this virtual thing, Zoom call, but a lot of guys aren't going to get it until in the mail maybe days later. And I'm curious, you know, like to me, that doesn't feel great. If I get the ring, and let's say I'm Ryan Zimmerman or Max Scherzer, but I know that a guy who hit a big home run in game three doesn't, like I don't want to be in that spot. But if I'm one of the guys that doesn't get the ring and I'm just seeing it on someone else's finger, right. I almost feel like maybe you wait to do it everybody at once. But I don't know. You tell me what you'd think about that. I know it's a really, really tough time to sort this all out.
Yeah, that's not the optimal situation. Obviously, you want everybody to get the ring at the same time so you can get everybody's reaction, especially if the guys really aren't, you know, opening the package until – you know, it's live on air. But that's one of the issues you have when you put a date on these things. And, you know, they're doing this date because this was the low point of the season, 19-31. And you know, Davey Martinez's head was on the chopping block. You know, I remember this specifically last year that, you know, we weren't even talking about, you know, nationally. I don't know about you guys locally, but nationally it wasn't even, you know, is he going to make it through the month? Is he going to make it through the week? We were wondering if he was going to make it day to day. And we're talking about Davey Martinez losing his job as the manager. And, you know, so when you put a hard date on it, now all of a sudden there are logistical issues, especially if, you know, when you're talking about the U.S. mail and you know, how things can be delayed and, you know, all the rings have to be manufactured and then you have the pandemic and it's just, you know, there's just countless things that can go wrong here. And it seems like that's going to be a tough situation. So I, you know, if I was a player and we were going to have this date and I didn't have my ring, yeah, I would probably be a little upset about that.
Yeah. Mike, to that point, by the way, about the day-to-day nature of it, Grant and I finished our radio program and jogged right over to Nats Park because we thought an announcement was coming. I mean, just to that point. And then of course the turnaround ensued from there on. Our guest is Mike Stanton, longtime big league reliever. The question I've got here about this maybe being the new normal, because you think about roster turnover, it happens, right? All 25 guys don't just come back year to year, and guys are in different places. Think Anthony Rendon or, you know, Gerardo Parra's in the KBO or wherever he is, right, playing around the world. Is this something that might be considered now for guys that aren't part of teams anymore, is to maybe do it this way?
I think there's going to be a lot of new normals for us, you know, things that we never really thought about. And, you know, especially if it's a big name player that moved on. And, you know, Danny, to your point, rarely, almost never does a 25-man roster return the next year. There's always some kind of turnover. And, you know, I did get when the Atlanta Braves in 1995, I did get a ring for that year. Now I was traded, so I wasn't on the team at the end of the season, but they did bless me with receiving a ring. And I think I got it in like July the next year. I was playing with the Red Sox at the time. And, I think the Braves, I can't even remember the situation. I got the ring. We were at home in Fenway and they basically just handed me the ring, say, hey, here you go. You know, so yeah, I think this could be something that, you know, a big player, you know, maybe let's say Ryan Zimmerman had retired or something like that, that he couldn't be there, that, you know, you could do a Zoom call or something. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of new normals for us once we finally do get through all this.
Mike Stanton on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. What was your take on the memo sent out within the last week? We're getting rid of sunflower seeds and spitting, and we're not going to be standing yeah. near each other on the field. Is that going to be doable?
It's good. You know what? There's going to be a learning curve, to say the least. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, and as disgusting as the spitting is sometimes, most of the time it's not even voluntary. It's kind of subconscious that you do it. And listen, everybody's going to make those mistakes, you know, and really what they're trying to do is I think people are realistic with the idea that, you know, it's not a light switch. We're not going to be able to tell these guys to stop spitting and stop high fiving and not hanging out next to each other, you know, and you're going to get caught. And get caught doesn't mean you get in trouble, but just like, hey, dude, come on, separate, you know, hey, you know, you spit three times that inning. Let's see if we can curb that a little bit. So it's, you know, and I think everybody, if we weren't in this situation and you were just trying to get ball players to stop spitting, never, ever, ever happen. I mean, just not going to do it. But in a situation like this, everyone's mindset is a little bit different. And if that's what it takes to get back on the baseball field, start playing the sports you love, start, you know, drawing a paycheck again, then, you know, those are the sacrifices that have to be made. But it's gonna be interesting to see exactly what the game looks like when we do get back on the field. And you notice I did say when, not if.
Yeah, it seems like you do think that it's going to happen, so maybe go into that. But I'd also be curious about the money part of this. I mean, you were a veteran leader in a clubhouse. You were, mm-hmm. you know, an old man pitching in the big leagues, Mikey, at one point in time. I'm curious about the idea that some guys just say, I'm not going to play for less money. I mean, how would you have felt? What would you have said to some of your teammates?
You know, I was having this discussion with Jeff Joyce on MLB Network Radio just last night. And, you know, it's one thing to say it when the game is not going on. It's one thing to make these statements when you're at home, you know, nobody's playing baseball. It's another thing when all your teammates are going to be on the field playing. You go, you know what? I'm going to hold out because I'm not making mine. Or even if it's someone that is healthy, that I'm going to hold out because I don't think that I can stay safe. It's going to be a much different situation when you do it and the guys are on the field playing. You know, those players, now all of a sudden you're going to be looked at differently. I think you look at yourself differently. So, you know, I don't want to say it's posturing. I want to say people are just, you know, it's just, you know, bluster talk. But I do think that it'll be much different sentiments coming out when, you know, the players do get back on the field. And I'll tell you what, I don't know how would you face your player, your teammates the next year if, you know, you held out for one reason or another and they're still on the field playing. That's not a good situation.
Mike, thank you as always, buddy. Terrific with us, man. Hope you're well.
Hey, you guys take it easy and everybody be safe out there.
Appreciate
it. Same to you, brother. There's Mike Stanton, who's got three rings, who is a multi-time champ. Who better to talk to about the ring ceremony and what it signifies and how it goes down than him? We're granting Danny what Landon Collins said. You want to hear this about the Redskins' defensive changes on the coaching staff. He likes them.
Landon Collins is excited about the Redskins' defense, and Danny Huey is excited about Ted Burtford. I love these guys. I'm a Ted Britt man. I can prove it. Three different time customer with Ted Burtford. They're the best at what they do, and they've been doing it for not one, not two, 60 years, people. 60-plus years since 1959. They've been in business, and they want to help you through this tough time. Little built-to-lend-a-hand program. Let me tell you about it. 0% financing, 84 months on 2019 Ford models. How about $0 for 72 months on new 2020s? Huh? Pretty good. 2019 F-250 truck, $12,500 below MSRP. 2019 F-150, $14,700 below the MSRP. 2020 Explorers and Mustangs. Oh, the discount's not that good. Oh, wait, it's excellent. $7,900 below the MSRP. 2020 Escape, $6,800 below the MSRP. The MSRP getting smacked around, quite frankly. It's like Monday Night Raw for this thing. Just getting elbow dropped, leg dropped Hulk Hogan style. You got to go see my guys at Tedford Ford when you do. Tell them.
From my brother and sister-in-law.
I pan it down. Let me see. The cheese... the high stinky cheddar.
That's Chet Steadman, my friend.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I thought it was going to be the year reference.
I get it now. What I thought initially was that it was Noah Syndergaard, who you said could never play for you despite being an excellent major league pitcher because he has long hair. That's what I thought it was because it's Mets colors. So I thought this was a Metropolitans trolling gift that you were given because Noah Syndergaard could never play for you and you guys had a Twitter battle. And that's what I thought it was, but apparently it's a kids movie reference.
So when I first opened it, I actually thought it was a Noah Syndergaard T-shirt as well. And I thought, wait a second. Nobody would send me that. I thought this was a birthday present. This is from some random Mets fan or something. But then I realized it's a Chet Steadman T-shirt from Rookie of the Year. He's throwing the high stinky cheddar. You've seen Rookie of the Year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Your thoughts on Rookie of the Year?
Replacement level. Fine. I liked him
good
better
kids
in that
baseball movie. Would you give it that?
I,
like,
I liked him better in that than I did in American Pie. You know, he went on to date Tara Reid in American Pie, the kid that starred in Rookie of the Year. Pitcher's got a big butt, yada, yada, yada. He had to find a way to get three outs without the magic arm, which I thought was something. To help the Cubs win, which was something else. But he was fine. He was good for a kid's movie. Like, everyone's kind of annoying in it, you know? Just to get out of the way, the kid's playing Major League Baseball. Like, stop making him do schoolwork right now. You know, like, the mom was annoying. But, yeah, it's fine.
The name of the actor you're looking for is Thomas Ian Nicholas. He's one of those guys with, like, a bunch of names.
Nicholas.
You don't know who directed that movie?
No idea.
Daniel Stern.
Wow.
Did you even know he directed movies?
No clue. I thought he did the voiceover for Wonder Years and was a bungling burglar. Like, that's his list.
Yeah, I didn't realize he directed that film. He has a couple movies on his ledger, actually, but that was by far the most successful of them. He actually directed some scenes, episodes of The Wonder Years when he was voicing The Wonder Years as well. But, yeah, I had no file. Did you hear what Landon Collins said about the Redskins' coaching staff changes? How about this? He was on a Zoom call with reporters yesterday. He said this about their defense. It feels different because of the staff. We have changed the whole coaching staff and have switched the defense around. I cannot speak for everyone, but it was much needed. When I talk about concepts and rules, set in stone things that need to happen within a defense, this defense has it all. End of his quote. He goes on to say that the ceiling has always been as high as they want it to be. He said that adding Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio only help expedite the ability to kind of get there. We just have a lot to prove. So he's not doing the Pierre Garçon, we're going to be the number one defense in the league thing that happens every year at this time.
Sure.
And look, I am buyer beware. You know me. I know these stories come out. These are as old as a fairy tale about the princess and the clock striking midnight and the prince and the kiss. Every defensive player right now all over the NFL is telling you that he thinks their defense is going to be great and that the sky is the limit for us. But with the talent that the Redskins have assembled in their front, added to a coaching staff now that is markedly upgraded, when you're talking about going from Greg Minuski, who is a quality control assistant at some random school in the SEC, I think like Kentucky or something like that, to Jack Del Rio as your coordinator and your head coach, while I had no real issue with Jay Gruden, he's an offensive-minded head coach. You now have a defense-first head coach in Ron Rivera. I think there is a very real possibility that Landon Collins isn't just blowing smoke here, that there are some flames as well. This defense should make major steps forward because of Chase Young, because of adding a safety, and because of Del Rio and Rivera. That's a huge deal to me.
It's the biggest upgrade in the organization is Del Rio over name that assistant that wouldn't be a coordinator under Gruden. That was one of Gruden's biggest weaknesses. So if we're do you have problems with Jay Gruden? Yeah, I got some problems. That's the biggest one, is Joe Barry and Greg Minuski and guys that wouldn't be coordinators otherwise. They needed an upgrade, and they got it. They have done wonders here for someone that's well-established, that is a guy that's been a head coach before, that is a coordinator that other teams would want. That is a huge departure. That's the biggest upgrade. So how do you make pieces fit, right? I saw for years Greg Williams would take guys that nobody else wanted, just you play the outside shoulder of this guy, you stand here, you do this, you do that, and they would have defenses that were serviceable. This Redskins defense was not serviceable last year, despite some decent talent in a couple spots. They were bad. You need them to not be bad. In fact, this year they need to be excellent to sort of justify the way that they've gone about their business here this offseason. So that means getting more out of players that aren't particularly great. You've got to figure out a way to get more out of Jimmy Moreland, Kendall Fuller, Sean Davis, Fabian Moreau, Ronald Darby. I mean, these also-rans need to not be the 32nd defense in the league, not to be 30th, 31st. If they can be in the teens, that's a massive upgrade. So to me, it's both things can be true. This is the offseason bluster that we always see, right? What new defensive coordinator or whomever's stood at the podium at this time of year during what should be OTAs and been like, we're going to be a more passive defense than you're. We hope to give up a lot of things underneath and maybe give up some big plays too and get our team out of the game. No, they're all talking about the same stuff. And of course they're excited about the new thing because the last thing didn't work. That's why we've got newness. Pause. The second conversation is massive upgrade for this organization. Massive.
Yeah, it's unequivocal. It's irrefutable. You cannot debate the difference between Minuski and Jack Del Rio in that role. And I really am not trying to belittle Greg Minuski because he's had a very great career. I mean, he played here and he became a coordinator in several stops, and he was decent in the NFL for a long time in a lot of roles. But right now, he is the defensive quality control assistant for the Kentucky Wildcats. I don't know if he was just going to retire and he's got a buddy there and he's like, I'll help you out and you can give me a weird title. But to go from the DC of the Redskins to the quality control assistant for the Kentucky Wildcats is about as big a demotion in terms of title as you could possibly have on this planet in that role as a defensive coach. And they go get Del Rio and Rivera. Now, you know my philosophy on coaching. I believe that offense is schemed more so than defense is. That is not to say that defensive coordinating is irrelevant. I don't believe that. I think you can, and clearly there's a reason you have the role. You can help a lot. You can make a defense better with coaching. But if I'm juxtaposing O and D, I think offense is more schemed. You can do it with more mediocre players, see the Patriots over the years. And defense is more heat-seeking missiles and ballers, and you better have guys. There's only so many things I can figure out based on my Wednesday and Thursday ideas, because at some point they're dictating terms to me. If I don't have great corners, they can throw four receivers on the field. If I got a really bad defensive line, they can shove it down my gullet with a big offensive line all day long. So you need players. And they still don't have enough great players. Landon Collins could be that. They certainly spent enough on him for him to be that. Chase Young could be that. You hope Vontaze Sweat can become really good. We talked about Payne and Allen and Ioannidis and what they've shown already and their potential. But they've got some solid defensive players. They don't have Pro Bowlers on defense right now. They don't certainly have all pros on defense. Maybe Chase Young could become that guy. Landon Collins was named an all pro once with the Giants. Maybe he gets back to that as they play better. But I guess my one hesitation in kind of crowning this defense as, yeah, I expect them to be really, really good. I don't think you find that around the league with defenses that don't have great talent. And I don't mean quantitatively. I mean, you know, individual players who are brilliant. And they don't really have that just yet. But what do you guys think about Landon Collins saying the Redskins' defense is about to take a huge step forward? 800-636-1067 is the number. Plus, I keep seeing people giving Michael Jordan heat for The Last Dance, and I don't get it. I want to bounce that off of you next on G&D. 6-1-0-6-7. You want to tweet us, you can do that as well. At Grant H. Paulson for me.
At Funny Danny for me.
Looking forward to hearing from you guys, and we thank you for listening. Landon Collins saying the Redskins' defense will be much improved because they have a better coaching staff. And this time of year, look, normally you kind of roll your eyes and you say, of course you think that the defense will
okay.
be better. Find me a player that doesn't pop off about how good things are going to be this season. Everybody's in first place. But it stands to reason that their defense could actually be really good, and they're going to have to be if they're going to win games this year. Because with Dwayne Haskins in year two and that running game, the way that it has been assembled behind the old man Adrian Peterson and the injury-prone Darius Geis, not going out and adding weapons at wide receiver before the draft, the tight end position being anchored, I guess, by Richard Rodgers or maybe
Logan Thomas.
Logan Thomas. They're not going to score a whole lot of points, so you better hold teams to 17 to 18, 20 points a game if you're going to have a chance to win.
And we've always disagreed about this, just sort of generally our philosophies about defense. I think to have a great defense, it needs to be what you ascribe to, which is star players. I mean, you know, if you got Lawrence Taylor, you got J.J. Watt, Aaron Donald, your defense is going to be a lot better. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But I saw too many Redskins defenses over the years with, you know, Joe Salavea and Demetric Evans and Ronaldo Wynn finished top 10. I think to be good, it's about coaching, responsibilities, outsmarting the offense, and I know a lot's dictated to you, but knowing what they want to do and how they want to do it and just sort of maintaining your discipline and sort of knowing what's coming as best you possibly can, you can be pretty good. To be great, you need great players. And to me, the Redskins have really good players in one area, and that's the defensive line. You want to call them edge rushers, interior guys, whatever. That's where they're good. Everywhere else, they're just okay. Good coaching to me takes just okay and turns it into pretty good. They haven't had good coaching to me on that side of the football since, you can go back. I mean, since, what would you say, since Mike Shanahan, right? Sort of back in that area.
Well,
and even then, maybe not. Yeah, and even then, maybe not, right? It's got to maybe precede that. Maybe it's Joe Gibbs.
I'm the kind of guy that I don't think a guy like Jim Haslett, you know, and you can run through the entire list, and Joe Barry and Greg Minuski, and there are others that I'm forgetting now, like, have all been dumb. I don't think they're all bad coaches. I don't think they all did a bad job. Like, at some point, something was missing. Your point's correct. We've seen Greg Williams, Greg Blasch, some other guys have success here and have, quote-unquote, top 10 defenses. You know, how do you define good? How do you define great? I don't normally kind of get into the specifics of the word choice. It's kind of just semantics to me. What I'm talking about, though, is if your defense is going to be a championship-level defense where you win football games because of your defense, and you have a defense that is of Super Bowl caliber. Now, if you want to be a high-octane offense like the Saints or the Packers and win with Breeze or Rodgers over the years, okay, cool, I'll sign up for that too. The Eagles did it pretty recently where they were more opportunistic on D and prolific in their passing game down the stretch. Cool, let's do it. But my point is the goal for this group, they're clearly building on a defense-first model to run the football. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done nothing all offseason at the skill position.
That's right, yeah. They were the 32nd-ranked offense last year, yeah.
The number two overall pick at the position where they were already better than any other position. And they're doing that because they're going to try to kick it like the Ravens or some of these other teams that have great defenses and make playoff runs. To do that, you need exceptional players. Like, Jack Del Rio doesn't just show up and wave a wand over Cole Holcomb, who was drafted in the fifth round, and now he's Ray Lewis. And so all I'm saying is they're going to get better, that level of good that you're talking about with Greg Williams, where you can rank in the top 10 in yards, which I don't care about at all, by the way. I'd rather rank 30th in yards and second in turnovers than 6th in yards and 18th in turnovers. But, like, yeah, you can make strides with coaching, and that's why I don't belittle defensive coordinating. I'm just saying the things I care about are pressure, sacks, takeaways, game-changing plays, and those are often made by playmakers, by great football players that have that playmaker gene that you're either born with or you're not.
Sure, and if you find me some Lawrence Taylors, let's bring them up, and nobody's going to refute that.
I might have just found one for you. We took them at number two. That's the hope.
Yeah, and I certainly hope so, and the expectations are astronomical. So good luck fulfilling those, kid. No pressure, I guess, right? Or maybe a lot of pressure. But you're right. I mean, there's usually a corollary. For example, if you're the 27th ranked defense in both points and yards, you're probably not towards the top of the league in a lot of those things. It's rare to be like those Greg Williams Redskins teams were under Gibbs, where they were top 10 multiple years in a row without being towards the top of the league in terms of pressure percentage and turnovers created and other things. That's a rarity, honestly. So I do know this, though. The way it's looked, I'd say, since 2008, where the Redskins haven't had a decent ranking at all. Their best, I believe, was 17th. Actually, no, they were 13th once in 2011.
But for the most part, what, yardage or?
That's in points and yardage. So for the most part, they've been right at the bottom of the league. A lot of 28s under Jay Gruden, 28 twice, 21st, 27th last year, etc. You're right in the sense that to be great, you need a bunch of different things. And I'm just pointing to, hey, there's a corollary. If you're putting teams in bad spots, like let's say it's 3rd and 9 more often, you get some of those great things, the sacks, the turnovers, the fumbles, the interceptions, you force pressure. If you're giving up a bunch of yards per play and teams are walking up and down the field on you, you're probably not going to get some of those things. So you're right. If given the choice, of course I'd rather be the top of the league in turnovers, disruption, negative plays, etc., even if it means I'm giving up a lot of yards. If I think any reasonable person now in this day and age where it's offense first, this league, you would, of course, make that trade-off. I guess my point is I think turnovers come from circumstances. With the occasional fluke aside, you're putting pressure on teams. You're forcing them into bad spots.
Yeah,
where
but
they
who
can't
makes, who
fool
puts
you
that
with play
pressure
action.
On teams? You go get yourself a Von Miller, you get yourself a
sure.
Khalil Mack, those numbers go up. Like, I look at Wade Phillips. Wade Phillips didn't get dumber before he lost his job with the Rams. They lost really good players because they've paid Jared Goff and they've paid other guys. So you go from coaching really, really good talent to coaching good talent. And all of a sudden, their production defensively wanes exponentially, and Wade Phillips is looking for a gig like everybody else. It is time, Danny. It's 11:40. And we do this each and every day. We give you a World Series rewind, which is one of our favorite moments of the show because we look back at 2019. The rewind presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. Save 20% on windows and doors during the month of May. PaulHenry'sWindows.com. Let's get to it.
Now the pitch. Rendon belts it at deep left center field. Bellinger going back, way back. Can he get there? No, it's off the wall and in play. Eaton around third being waved home. The relay throw will be held. He slides across the plate without a play. On a booming double off the wall for Tony Two Bags. Anthony Rendon with his first hit of the postseason drives in the second run of the inning. And you can hear the Nationals fans spread out around Dodger Stadium. Two runs home in the inning. It's the Nationals 3 and the Dodgers nothing.
NLDS Game 2 series is tied 1-1 on October 4th, 2019. You need it, man. And Anthony Rendon with that double in a night in which Scherzer struck out the side in the eighth and Strasburg pitched the masterpiece and the Nats were able to come back with that series split to Nationals Park. Just amazing. We keep saying this as we play these highlights, and it goes all the way back to when he came back from his elbow injury in May. But the number of unbelievably huge moments from Anthony Rendon, people forget how incredible he was last year. Without him, not only did they not make the playoffs, you know, they have an embarrassing season. He's now gone. He should have gotten more attention for the MVP. That's kind of the realization you have when we go through all of these moments.
No issue with that. A couple oddities in this game. Remember, Sean Doolittle gave up a home run to Babe Ruth. I mean, Max Muncy, who turned into the greatest living hitter. Doolittle doesn't give up homers to lefties, and he gave up one to Muncy. That was pretty incredible. And you remember the end of this game, the 9 million pitch at bat between Daniel Hudson to close it out and Corey Seager. That was, and we talked to him later about it, the bubble gut inducing, oh my God, how terrifying is this? They almost lost game two, GP. Bases drunk with Seager at the plate, the chance to, you know, for the Dodgers to break through. Million pitches finally struck him out on a slider. That would be the thing that kind of helped propel the Nats the rest of that series.
That is your World Series Rewind presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. Save 20% on windows and doors during the month of May. Paul Henry's Windows. .com. We're Grant and Danny next. There is an update on when your city that you live in and that I love so much, D.C., could be getting back to normal a little bit. So we'll pass that along. Plus, how long would you wait for donuts and what food would you wait for the longest? Grant and Danny on the Fan. All right, in about a minute, I'm going to tell you the latest report on Dak Prescott and what he turned down from the Dallas Cowboys and what he's seeking, because it is outrageous and preposterous. It will be a kind of pull over before I tell you kind of situation.
I say go for it, Dak. Go for it, buddy. You get that money. You make sure you get every single dollar and have every cent count against the salary cap for a long time. Go Dak Prescott.
Oh,
you can do it, buddy.
Yeah. Go Dak, go. Get paid, buddy. Hold out. Do whatever it takes.
Bigly, yeah, that's right.
And I think it's smart for him to play the Cousins game in the meantime. I think to keep the franchise tag year by year, be guaranteed, get the exponential raises is brilliant. What he's asking for, though, is just absolutely otherworldly. So we'll get into that in a second. Real quick, you don't care about NASCAR, but I wanted to bounce something off of you. So last night I watched the entire race. I'm in the basement. Looks great at night. The sparks are flying. It was sick. Really, really enjoyed it. And Kyle Busch, who everybody hates, and I kind of pretend to be dumber on NASCAR, I guess, than I am, in the sense that while I don't watch it, I know a little bit about a bunch of the drivers. I've been to Richmond a couple times. You know, I grew up. My mom babysat for a guy who was in Denny Hamlin's crew recently as one of his spotters. And so I kind of from afar know a little bit about it. I know enough about it to know that Kyle Busch is hated because he's just an absolute savage on the track, and he has no problem wrecking people if it means he gets to finish higher than he was before the wreck. But there was this amazing moment last night, Danny, where Chase Elliott, who, Thommy, you'll have to tell me, I'm guessing that's Bill Elliott's son. Am I right about that? Okay, so Bill Elliott's kid, Chase, who's 24 years old, is racing hard with Kyle Busch, who's 35, and Elliott's got a hell of a car. He's been on restarts all night, flying past cars. He's got a chance to win this thing, right, Danny? And they're vying for spots in the top five. Kyle Busch just wrecks him. I mean, just flat out, like you can describe it however you want to. Jeff Gordon made it pretty clear that while he didn't think he did it on purpose, it was a massive mistake that he made. if he was trying to judge. He was at the bottom of the track. He tried to come up to the top of the track to cut Elliott off, but he was like 2 feet from being in the clear. He just took him out, spun him. He goes into the wall. His night is over. And it just so happened it started raining about 2 miles later, and so Kyle Busch finished second. Chase Elliott was in second when he wrecked him out, and the race was over. But I was thinking about this. In sports, in what other sport is there, in what other competition, can you just kind of end a dude's night, whatever the equivalent of wrecking them is, and there's no penalty, there's no flag thrown, you're in no way worse off? Now, they might have to, you know, eventually answer for their sins. You know, Kyle Busch maybe gets spun out in three races, or, you know, maybe some guy comes after you from his pit crew, they didn't last night, and punches you in the face, and you police yourself a little bit that way. But is there anything like that? The only thing I came up with was if you hit a guy and knock him out of the game in hockey and you say it wasn't dirty because Kyle Busch said, I didn't do anything wrong. It was a mistake. I'm sorry. I mean, he made a mistake. He admitted to that, I guess. He said he did do something wrong, but he didn't try to wreck him, in other words. Is it the same as like if Tom Wilson hits a guy and breaks his collarbone and he's done for the series and he says, oh, my bad, it wasn't meant to be dirty? Is that the same, or is there nothing like that in sports? Because I'm thinking as I'm watching, there's
like
no penalty for him.
Thing. Yeah.
He just gets to finish second now, and the other guy's night is pummeled.
The closest I could come up with is if, you know, a pitcher just decides, I'm going to hit this guy. And you could pretend that's by accident, right? Like if, I mean, we know there's history with Hunter Strickland and Bryce Harper, right? But let's just say Hunter Strickland, there wasn't, and he just decides, I don't like Bryce Harper. I mean, Cole Hamels got to keep pitching in a game where he admitted to throwing at Bryce Harper on purpose. You know, like, let's say it's a different spot and Harper can't continue the game. There's no repercussions for it, right? If it's an obvious lead-up, then, yeah, guys get suspended. The pitcher just has to, you know, miss one relief outing or a start or something like that, and it's not a big deal. His day gets pushed back. But that's the closest I can think of. I mean, in-game is the difference. I mean, there are goons, guys like Ryan Reeves and things that hockey should be doing way more to police out of the game, by the way, where – the whistle stops, and now you're taking swings at people, or if there's a dirty shot during the game, you're probably going to the penalty box for it. There's nothing like that, though, that you're talking about. There's no real equivalent.
Let me tag in NASCAR Thommy for a second, because I had a hot take last night on Twitter where I said, you know, in hockey, if that happens, Wilson now has to fight with someone, right? I mean, they police themselves is the phrase I use that you just referenced. Now, people will say, and I know this has happened, I've seen it for years and years on SportsCenter or on YouTube, where NASCAR – we'll have two guys fight each other like on pit lane after a race. But what I'm saying, Tom, is there should be like sanctioned, like Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch now have to fight if one of them calls the other out. And like they have to like put on gloves and get in the ring and do that. Or something. There has to be a way to police it, because Kyle Busch just benefits immensely from screwing a guy over last night, and it feels like nothing bad happens to him.
Yeah, but you know, coming from someone who's just watching NASCAR for the first or second time with any sort of actual focus, I can understand your frustration, but this happens every week. I mean, and the fact that Dale Jr., Kyle Busch, and Jeff Gordon all said that it was a mistake and he just, you know, misjudged the gap where he was trying to get behind Chase Elliott to draft, that's the type of thing that's going to happen every week.
So you believe him when he says he 100%. Didn't mean to wreck him?
Okay. I've been watching racing for 20 years, and I've seen it a million times. Well, I've seen Kyle Busch wreck people.
Is it just because they hate him? Like, why are so many people saying that he did it on purpose?
Because he wrecks people all the time. I mean, he is – they call him Rowdy Busch for a reason. But in this situation, this was an actual mistake. This was something where he thought that he had enough space. Harvick was coming at a pretty good rate of speed. He had to fit in. He couldn't fit. There goes Chase Elliott. It happens all the time. But sometimes the good guys get dumped and sometimes the bad guys get dumped. If Chase Elliott wants to make a problem of it, he can wreck him in the next race. But that's when NASCAR is going to come down on Chase Elliott for retaliation.
Kyle Busch wouldn't really get in trouble for
that. No, because he's apologized. And he talked to Alan Gustafson, who's the crew chief, and he said, here's what happened from my point of view. And then they kind of talked it out that way. That's kind of how it goes. If you want to send a teammate after Kyle Busch or something like that, you know, someone who's not doing well, maybe a lap down, he gets near Kyle Busch and he wrecks him, sure, but that's where it's going to escalate, because this was a mistake.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Who would have thought we're breaking down NASCAR with Tommy? But that's where we are in this pandemic at this point. Good insight, Tommy. I appreciate that. He blitzes next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.